Senator Dianne Feinstein. Okay, first question, Senator. You've been at this a long time. Why do you still have the fire in the belly, and why do you want to keep doing this, you know, six more years in the U.S. Senate?
Well, you know, on occasion, I wonder. Maybe you're right. But the great bulk of the time, I'm really ready to go. I really think that my work is more important than ever, and that's not ego-driven. It's driven by what's around me. It's Trump being president. It's the opposition party controlling the House, the Senate, the presidency. I feel the nation is best served is by this election, changing that dynamic so that at least one House is Democratic, and we can get through some legislation that is good for people. With respect to health care, with respect to immigration, respect to that whole portfolio, which is now so negative, we can turn it into a positive.
You've taken some criticism in some quarters for not being critical enough of President Trump, and then on occasion you're more critical. Can you explain a little bit about your thinking about how you feel about him now as a president so far?
Yeah, how I feel about him now. I feel disappointment. I feel that the primary job of a president is to bring people together, to drive an economy, to see that life is better for all citizens. And I see this president more and more creating divisions. I see bias and prejudice going up, not down. I see people disliking one another for terrible reasons, and this is what a president should be able to sense and stop and go out not to his base, not to rev up his base, but to create a base of Americans together, and this just doesn't happen. Additionally, he doesn't tell the truth. That's a problem. Additionally, there's an unpredictability that for those of us in the House and the Senate, and I don't know if others will admit to this, you don't know what's going to happen next. And the way it has always been, and I've served under Democratic and Republican presidents, is that both parties, particularly when you rise to the position of a chairman or a ranking member, will invite you up and will discuss issues with you. And so there is a process, for example, on judges, there is a process where there is the ability to work with the administration on the selection of judges. But this president is, in effect, stacking the appellate court. And we're shortly going to put out a report, the Democrats, on the Judiciary Committee, that shows that, and he's stacking them with young, very right-wing Republicans so that the court gets changed for the next 40, 50 years. And that's a bad thing. So there's a lot of work to do, and there's a lot of standing up to do. The problem is with this, how do you do the standing up so that you can win, so that you can get done what you want to get done? And I think that's always hard. But we work toward that goal, and I think we've achieved it on occasion. And, you know, I've achieved legislation which he has signed off on. And then you feel very good about it, because in a Republican Senate, a Republican House with a Republican president, you have to get bills passed, and they have to be signed by the president.
Well, you've always been very much a bipartisan legislator in an increasingly partisan and divided political world in Washington. What do you think the approach of the party, of the Democratic Party, should be to the midterms, when you have some people going all-out anti-Trump, resist, impeach, and others, like yourself, wanting to take a more pragmatic approach?
Well, I think the issue of impeachment for legislators is really not the one. I mean, that's going to depend on what Bob Mueller finds and what comes out. And as you know, if there is an impeachment, it begins in the House. But in the meantime, there is a lot of work to be done for the people. And you have to be able to play a role on the committees to get money for your state, for transportation, for health care, for other things, to see that these bills pass, to see that poor people get fed, to see that clinics and that depend on Medicare operate. And that takes working with people of the other party. Now, fortunately, in the Senate, that's probably much easier for me to do than it is in the House for others to do, because, and I can certainly speak for judiciary, and I can speak for energy and water, where I rank on both, and I can sit down and work something out with Lamar Smith on a bill, an appropriation bill, which includes our nuclear warheads, which includes the Department of Energy, which includes the Army Corps of Engineers, and all those programs. And we have always worked together, and we don't always agree. We don't agree on the nuclear question. I understand that, and he's chairman, and that makes it difficult. But you do the best you can, and you win some, and you don't win others.
You know, there are certain issues where people have said, "Oh, you're a little behind the times, you're out of touch," and then you'll catch up. I'm thinking same-sex marriage. I'm thinking now perhaps legalization of marijuana. Can you explain how your positions evolve on some of these social issues and on legalized marijuana? I know you've been saying that perhaps the federal government needs to recognize California's law. How do you feel about the fact that Californians have legalized marijuana now?
Well, yes, they have. And I oppose the ballot measure, but now I'm going to be as helpful as I can to see that it is well regulated, to see that the addicting part of or the hallucinogenic parts of marijuana are controlled, and that it is properly sold. And I think that that's the job. So that's marijuana. What you mentioned one other thing.
Oh, same-sex marriage, but that's been a few years now.
Look, legally, I have always been for same-sex marriage. Legally, not before the law changed. The law changed, and I don't have any problem with it. I mean, I'm one of 14 that voted against the Defense of Marriage Act, which supported only marriage between a man and a woman. And that's a long time ago.
During the Clinton administration, right.
My colleague Barbara Boxer and I were two of the 14.
Right, during the Clinton years. I wanted to ask you about guns. Oh, obviously, there's been another horrific school shooting, this time in Texas. This has been an issue for you, of course, for so many years, going back, 40 years now. What are your thoughts on this latest incident, and what can be done at the federal level? What do you think should be done?
Oh, you know, Doug, this just... I was listening to television, and I heard the beginning of it, and I thought, oh, God, please, another one. There have been 200 school shootings since Sandy Hook. There have been 400 adults and children killed in those school shootings. And I keep thinking, I thought this was with Sandy Hook. It was so awful. Who can kill 6- and 7-year-olds like that? But this young man did just that. Took his mother's gun, shot his mother, went to the school, killed 20 children and 6 staff. And then it happens again. And then you look at Florida and you think, a teacher testified before us when we had the hearing, and what she said was, bullets were coming through the walls, killing my students. And there it is again. And you look at the guns, and you see what they can do. You see their velocity. I've talked to trauma doctors who say they just chew up the organs, and sometimes the exit holes are as big as an orange. So the bullets velocity and yaw in the human body is just very destructive. And you don't need them. You don't need them. You can't use them for hunting. Every state or most states have limits on the number of bullets you can use, and nobody's going to shoot a bear or a deer with an assault weapon. So what do you need them for, and why can't we get rid of them? We have 15 million of them. We're 4% of the world's population, and we have 42% of the guns. Now, those two figures alone say, whoa, there's going to be problems. And I, as you know, did the legislation on assault weapons. It was law for 10 years. It did reduce the massacres. It did reduce the number of people shot, killed, and wounded. And then the year after it ended, one gun company began to manufacture the AR-15 and produced 1.5 million that year. And then subsequent to that, there are 15 million assault weapons floating around this country. Weapons of war, cosmeticized to look fancy and less ugly, easy to use, accurate, long range, and absolute kill weapons. Why do we need them? Why, for the good of the country, don't these people say, I'm going to give them up? I had the head of Dick's Sporting Goods. He has 370 gun stores, and he's not selling assault weapons. He's stopped. He ought to get a medal for that. And yet he gets flack. We now have companies, Walmart, not selling assault weapons. I wish every gun store would refuse to sell assault weapons. I wish every gun show where a youngster can buy one of these with no questions asked would stop selling them, but they don't. And that's why we need legislation. That's my quest. And the National Rifle Association has to come to grips with what they are doing to this country.
If we can get back to the campaign for a moment, will you debate whoever comes in second, whether it's Kevin DeLeon or perhaps one of the Republicans, as unlikely as that seems, will you debate that person before November in the general election campaign?
Yes, I assume I will.
You're willing to do that?
Yes.
Or how concerned are you about this Patrick Little, the neo-Nazi from the Bay Area, who seems to be polling fairly strongly in at least a couple of polls among Republicans, and he thinks he's got a shot of finishing second against you, and he's got, you know, there are anti-Semitic robocalls out there.
Yes. I know that. And look, this kind of prejudice and bias went out, I think, a long time ago. And I think the people of California are too smart to get sucked in by this man.
Would you debate him if he ends up being your opponent?
Well, I don't believe he will be.
All right. So do you feel reinvigorated a little bit on this campaign trail by the fact that you have a significant primary challenge and you've got to get out there and campaign and really interact with the people in a way that is a little different from the day-to-day business of Washington?
Yeah, well, I have a campaign challenge. Every poll has showed me, and you know this, very substantially ahead. It isn't a close race. Sure, I suppose it could be. And, you know, I've got a job that's 3,000 miles away from my constituency. That's always hard to do. But one of the things that we do is we do a constituent breakfast. We have 100-150 people every Wednesday. We see lots of groups. We answer every letter. There have been 3 million so far this year by actual count. And I meet with a lot of people that come back to D.C. as well as in the state when I'm in the state.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Senator. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us about the campaign and some of the issues. Anything else you want to get off your chest or share?
Well, the only thing I'd like to say is, you know, to Californians, we are by far the biggest state. We need to stay together. We need to go the distance. We're the fifth largest economy on earth. And we need to solve the homeless problem together. This is the biggest problem facing California right now. And it's one to which I've dedicated myself. And California, please help me do it.
What's the federal role that you see, the role you can play in addressing that?
Well, I've just put together a team. What I'm doing is we're evaluating all of the programs. L.A. has about 55,000 homeless people. They have a very good program there. Mayor Garcetti has been just great in pushing things, as have the Board of Supervisors and the City Council. I've talked with them, and I need to talk again. And I want to just see how we can be helpful to mayors all across this country in meeting the scourge of homelessness. And it's not easy, because one size doesn't fit all. And how you develop the therapeutic communities, how you develop housing that's inexpensive, how you develop housing for women and children, how you change the shelter format to make it more than just the night, but a place that functions during the day for the betterment of these individuals. It is very bad on the streets of San Francisco and in places in L.A. And so I hope to have my people spread out and do a kind of evaluation of what we have and what we don't have, and then put together a program to really get what's necessary to where it's necessary.